super excited. And yeah, you kind of you feel this big fall buzz in the air. It's kind of gloomy. It's rainy today. There's a nice
little
chill. You
got a hoodie on today.
Yeah, I got the sweatshirt on as well. So shout out to Target. I don't know what they're making in their fabric anymore, but it is the softest thing ever. So it was like $10. Can't beat that. But yeah, fall is here, and so is football. I'm pumped.
Yeah, stock price is up today, so I guess that's from the Heather buys. So you got that as well. We have NFL tonight, records being set in the NBA last night, getting closer to the Major League Baseball regular season. We just have a lot going on.
I think we need to really stop encouraging people, especially the young kids, from watching the NBA, because it has just become 100% a recruiting prop for Kentucky, and I don't appreciate it, John Calipari, because these Wildcats are just showing out, and we don't need the impressionable young McDonald's All-Americans watching that. We need them watching, you know, Kevin Durant, so we need to get him back in the fold.
Okay. Well, Kevin Durant will be back next year. Yeah,
I guess we do have Grant Williams. Yeah, we do have Grant Williams.
No doubt. I will have to say here that he's not made quite the impact that some of the Kentucky guys have.
No.
As impressive as Grant's been.
Yeah. And hey, he's learning. He is filling out that 3-point line. I have full confidence in him, you know, figuring it out. But yeah, the Kentucky recruiting video that is on display every single night in the NBA bubble is just unbelievable.
Yeah. Who would you take, Grant or Anthony Davis? Be kind of tough.
Or Bam, or yeah, there's a lot of options.
There are a lot of guys. Kentucky, they've recruited really well.
Yeah, I love the Ringer put out a video like, what are they being fed while they're in Kentucky? And one guy was like, pump the brakes, they're all McDonald's All-Americans going in, you know, like they're starting at a really high level and they're just getting
these
better.
Aren't a bunch of overachievers. I mean, they've achieved a lot, but the expectations were pretty high for these guys. Like Hero is considered a huge overachiever as what, the number 14 pick in the NBA draft.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And Bam, the number 13 pick. So there you go.
Bam with that fact right there. Heather Harrington here on Sports 180. Joel Silverberg here. I'm Josh Ward. Let's take a look around the sports world.
The biggest news, the main stories, the headlines that have everyone talking. It's time to take a look around the sports world.
The Heat did get the win last night, Heather, so they're up 3-1 in that series. Tyler Hero with 37 points. Quite a mark for the rookie out of Kentucky.
Yeah, just unbelievable. We might have a nice little pop-up fact regarding Tyler Hero coming up later on. But it's an impressive Heat team. What Jimmy Butler is doing, the way that they are playing such fundamentally sound basketball. You see all of these basketball coaches from across the country tweeting about this is how you win a championship. You don't need a top five player in the NBA if all of the pieces are going to be playing the way the Miami Heat are. But I still think in his mind, Jimmy Butler thinks he's a top five player. Whether that's reality or not, it can be litigated on a different day.
Well, we can litigate it right now. He isn't a top five player, but he is a terrific basketball player, and he is the number one reason the Heat have a 3-1 series lead. He's not the only reason. That's a really good roster. Pat Riley's done a terrific job getting them back to being in championship contention, and the number one factor, I would say, would be getting Jimmy Butler in free agency with the development and drafting of good players. They almost traded Goran Dragic, I think, during the regular season and decided to stick with him. He's been very important there. But yeah, the Heat have a 3-1 series lead on a good Celtics team, and they're one win away from getting to the NBA Finals. And that's a storyline that I don't think too many people have thought of, but you could see LeBron versus the Heat, where he won two NBA titles.
Yeah, I think it would be. I think that is what you are going to end up seeing. Now, we'll see how long each series goes. I don't want to be too prisoner of the moment. I said Lakers in five yesterday. I'm really feeling Heat in five as well, just because of how well the Heat are playing. And the Celtics, I mean, they went on a couple of runs last night, but you never really felt like the momentum was on their side. But yeah, I just...
Because Tyler Hero kept hitting a three every time you felt like Boston was going to go on a run.
No kidding. No kidding. And so I just feel like it's going to be a fast conference finals for both sides of the bracket. And then, yeah, LeBron James going to try and put a dagger in Miami Heat fans' hearts.
So tonight you get game four between the Lakers and the Nuggets. Lakers, I think, favored by 6.5 points, somewhere in that range, against the Denver Nuggets, who, of course, are trying to even up the series with the Lakers leading 2-1. Just an early tease. You're obviously leaning Lakers if you think that they still take care of it in five.
Yeah, I really do. And even though I love Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, I just feel like the last game, game three, was a big wake-up call for the Lakers. I understand they're playing every other day, and that's going to take a toll on LeBron, but I just feel like he can handle it, and I feel like they're going to want to try and get this thing wrapped up as soon as possible. So I'm feeling the Lakers tonight in four.
We'll talk about that a little bit more this afternoon. We'll talk some SEC football. The NFL is in action tonight. You get the Jaguars and the Dolphins. Doesn't sound like the most exciting matchup, but you do get to see Gardner Minshew. Minshew mania continues. And the Jags, who just got ripped apart during the offseason after they were dumping a lot of players, Leonard Fournette, soon before the season began. And it looked like, hey, they're just going into tank mode. They actually have some good players, just young players. But an impressive start. They won the first game of the season against Indianapolis, and then last week took the Titans down to the wire and go in as three-point favorites against the Miami Dolphins, who oddly got some preseason love going in, I think because they finished on a strong note last season. But the Dolphins go into tonight's game trying to avoid an 0-3 start to the season.
Yeah, it's definitely not the most glamorous game. It's not going to be like circled on everybody's schedule as just a can't miss. So more people might tune into basketball tonight. But I'm just waiting here for whenever it's going to be Tua time. So if the Dolphins do go down 0-3, we might get that sooner, so I might be rooting for the Jacksonville Jaguars to go ahead and win tonight, just so that we maybe see some Tua time in week four.
Joel, we go into game four with the Tampa Bay Lightning leading the Dallas Stars 2-1. That will be tomorrow night, so a 2-1 series lead now for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, they'll actually play back-to-back games tomorrow and Saturday for games four and five, and with the way the Lightning have been so electric in the last two games, the series could end this weekend. The Lightning gets Steven Stamkos back, so his presence isn't just felt on the ice, but his performance as well, as he scored a goal. The Lightning had three goals in the second period alone. Second time in the last two games they've had three goals in a single period. They get the win last night. They take the series lead 2-1. Stars could be in a lot of trouble, especially if Stamkos comes back and plays like the all-star that we're used to seeing him play like.
Yeah, it felt like a statement win. I know it's just one game, but 5-2. Does that feel like momentum has really shifted toward Tampa?
I think so, especially with the way that they came out in the first period of Game 2 and just took control from the onset. And I think Dallas could come back, but when you're able to go out and put out back-to-back offensive performances, and now you have your captain back, keep in mind, Tampa's made this entire Stanley Cup run without one of its best players on the ice. Now you've got him back. It's a totally different team. And Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point continue to be so, so good for Tampa Bay. It might be a little bit too much for Dallas to overcome.
Everything's coming up Tampa as Heather Harrington, your Tampa Bay Rays, clinched the AL East last night for the first time in 10 years. 2010 the last time.
How about it? I'm feeling the Rays. I just am all in on this magic. I can't tell you five people on the team, but it was something that I wanted to go. I wanted to zig while everybody was zagging, picking the Dodgers and the Yankees. And my zig so far is looking pretty good on the other half of it, though, with the Cardinals. We're very much still in wait-and-see mode.
That is fair to say, although we had to wait to see them get back to action, and that happened. So the Rays winning the AL East, good for them for sure, and we'll see what happens in the postseason, which is just a few days away. It's been a 10-year run. Now, the Nationals, they finally were able to win the World Series last year. They broke through. They will not win it this year as they have been eliminated from the postseason. So, once again, we will not have a repeat champion in the World Series.
Now, for the 20th consecutive year, you will not have a repeat champion. Of the 20 defending champs since 2001, 11 of those have missed the playoffs. Two ended up losing in the division series, five lost in the championship series, and then two ended up losing in the World Series. So, yeah, the Yankees go back, try to get the repeat in 01, but they ended up losing, and Philly in 09. That's according to Andrew Simon of MLB.
You know, funny thing with Major League Baseball is I don't know that I hear it as much now or have recently, but for a long time there was so much complaining about no salary cap, so baseball is just easy. The New York Yankees and Boston Red Sox of the world go out and spend the most money and they win. And look, they do win and they're in contention a lot, but it's not just them. And I would say Major League Baseball has as much or more parity as anybody that we see out there. The thought has been the NFL has all the parity, and they do in the regular season, but then you get the postseason, it's just like, okay, which team has Peyton, Brady, or Roethlisberger? Well, that's who wins the AFC. And that's obviously changing now. Peyton's not playing anymore. Brady's not there anymore. Roethlisberger's near the end. But the NFL was the one that still at the end of the season, you were seeing most of the same teams or at least the same players leading the way. Major League Baseball's spread things out pretty well.
My favorite silly sports argument of all time would be people getting in an uproar saying, X team went out and bought a championship because they just went and bought the best players. And I'm like, yeah, that's what a professional sports league is trying to do. You're trying to go out, spend your money wisely so you get players that can win a championship. And now you're mad at them? Like, do you get mad if you walk into an ice cream shop and they don't have jeans that you can buy? I mean, come on. This is a business, people. The number one silly sports argument. That's my favorite.
And don't be surprised when the Stars go to New York or L.A. or maybe Dallas or Miami or San Francisco. That's how it works. And that's how it's going to work everywhere. So just kind of a funny thought there with the Tampa Bay Rays winning the AL East and the Washington Nationals winning the World Series last year, being out this year. Of course, they've dealt with a number of changes, free agency, injuries, all that stuff included. That is a look around the sports world. Here on a busy Thursday, a busy upcoming weekend with NFL action tonight, postseason play going on, and the SEC being 2 days away from kicking off. Speaking of, the media has made predictions for how the 2020 season will play out. We'll get to those coming up next here on Sports 180 with Heather Harrington and Joel Silverberg. I'm Josh Ward. This is FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Heather.
This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us today. Download the WNML app. You can listen on the go anytime as Sports 180 each and every day is presented by Action247.com. Heather, the SEC will kick off on Tuesday. The media has applied some predictions to how the season will play out. Surprisingly, Alabama was picked to win the West ahead of LSU, Auburn, and Texas A&M. And then, no sarcasm here, I am a bit surprised. Florida was picked ahead of Georgia. It was a close vote. Florida received 53 first-place votes, Georgia 43, but Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, the predicted order of finish in the Eastern Division. Alabama was picked to win the SEC. Georgia and LSU received the second most votes, actually, and then Florida the fourth highest number of championship votes, but it was Alabama in a landslide. 77 votes for Alabama, 7 for Georgia and LSU, 5 for Florida. Your first team quarterback, Kyle Trask, at Florida. I'd say that's part of the reason, at least, that Florida is being picked to beat Georgia. Your second team quarterback is Kellen Mond at Texas A&M. Third team is Mac Jones at Alabama. All three quarterbacks on Tennessee's schedule. 5 Tennessee Vols were picked on the All-SEC teams. Trey Smith on the offensive line is first team, as is place kicker Britt Samaglia. Second team linebacker Henry To'oto'o. And then third team on the offensive line, Wanya Morris. And in the defensive backfield, Bryce Thompson.
Yep. And so that very much is similar to how the coaches kind of saw things, at least for Tennessee and looking at Tennessee's roster. We've said...
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah, we've said maybe... We'll see as the season goes on, but the Wanya Morris, that might just be more of a potential pick instead of what you're actually going to see on the field. So long way to go there, but very similar. I am surprised to see Florida edge out Georgia as SEC East champions. But as we were talking about before we went on the air, even though Georgia basically has the dominant football roster when you look at position by position breakdown and where the recruiting stars are, Georgia wins basically 4 out of every 5 of those battles. And the fact that Kirby Smart head-to-head has been taking it to Dan Mullen. This year, when you consider the changes at Georgia, when you consider the continuity at Florida along with Kyle Trask coming back, and the schedule component, the 10-game schedule for Florida looks more favorable than the 10-game conference schedule for Georgia, and you put all of those ingredients together, that's how you get a narrow vote where Florida edges out Georgia.
Do you lean one way? Which way would you go, Florida or Georgia, to win the East this year?
You know, it's hard to say. I still think the smart money should go to Georgia, but this is a weird year. I love what Dan Mullen is doing. You know, there was a great piece during the quarantine, the sports shutdown, of everything that Dan Mullen was stressing to his team about, look, you've got to make just the best decisions, and you have to be putting yourself in a position to win every single day, because the difference in trying to go from an 8-win team to a 10-win team, you can do some things. You don't have to be perfect, but when you're trying to go from a 10 or an 11-win team and up that ante and actually be a championship contender, everything has to be perfect. Your margin of error has to it's basically minute. And so I thought that that was really interesting. I would still lean towards Georgia winning the East, I guess, is my long-winded answer. But I can definitely see how the path for Florida was there.
Yeah, Georgia's schedule is more difficult, I would say, especially early on. Florida does have to play at Ole Miss, and I don't think that's a gimme win, but the Gators are big favorites in that game. Here's the first half of the schedule for Florida. At Ole Miss, South Carolina at home, at Texas A&M, that will not be easy. LSU at home won't be easy, but it is at home. You like that better. And then Missouri at home should be a win. You have 2 weeks to get ready for Georgia. Georgia has 2 weeks to get ready for Florida. They're both off the week before playing each other. Then Florida plays Arkansas, at Vandy, Kentucky at home, Tennessee on the road. Could Tennessee be in a position where it's trying to beat the Florida Gators on December 5th to keep the Gators out of Atlanta playing for the SEC title?
I think that that's absolutely a possibility, and we'll see what ends up happening. But yeah, I mean, I just like that that game is at the end of the season, because so many times you get your championship hopes dashed as a Tennessee fan by the third week of the season, and then you're always playing from behind trying to back your way in. So I would love to see a motivated Florida Tennessee team going up against Florida with Jarrett Garantano in his last regular season game for the Vols, trying to keep Florida from winning an SEC title. There are so many storylines wrapped up into that narrative. I really hope that that's the case.
Yeah, and then on Georgia's side, maybe the defense is so good that this won't matter, but Georgia, while it's trying to figure out the quarterback position and where the offense is early on with Todd Monken as the OC, weeks 2 through 5 on the schedule are this: Auburn at home, Tennessee at home, at Alabama, and at Kentucky. That is not an easy 4-game stretch at all that Georgia will play. And maybe Georgia will be fine there, but in terms of the level of opponents, it doesn't get much more difficult than that. In fact, 5 games in a row: Auburn, Tennessee, Bama, Kentucky, Florida. There's an off week in between the Florida and Kentucky game.
Yeah, and circle that Kentucky-Georgia game, because it also comes after the Alabama game, and you always hear about the wild statistics of how many teams lose after they play Alabama. One, because they're beaten up physically, and two, because it's just so mentally exhausting trying to take on the Tide, and, you know, Kirby Smart trying to be the coach that finally beats his boss or former boss. You know, that could be an upset alert game for the Georgia Bulldogs playing the Kentucky Wildcats that week.
Yeah, so it helps that Georgia is Georgia, but when you just look at the schedule, in terms of the rankings right now, Georgia has 5 consecutive games against top 25 teams, 4 of them in a row, 5 games in 6 weeks when you consider the off week ahead of Florida. That's not all that favorable, I would say. So if Kirby's had a few reasons to not be in the best of moods, I would say, over the last few weeks. But you got to go play it out. And that will start on Saturday. We're going to come back for our Call of All segment. There is a lot of excitement and hype around Tennessee's offensive linemen. So why don't we talk about it with a former Tennessee offensive lineman. Kyler Kerbison joins us next for our Call of All segment here on Sports 180. Right now, we hit a midday sports minute with Joel Silverberg on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
They thrilled you, made you stand up and cheer, and gave you memories to last a lifetime. But where are they now? Sports 180 plays catch up with those that have worn the orange. Here's today's Call of Vol.
Welcome back into Sports 180. We are excited to be with you this afternoon with Heather Harrington. I'm Josh Ward. And for today's Call of All segment, we are excited to welcome back our friend Kyler Kerbison, former Tennessee offensive lineman, joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Kyler, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. Glad to be back. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're doing really well, and we have a ton to talk about. We're going to talk about your venture into the media world as well while you're on here with us, as it's been a few years since you played on the offensive line at Tennessee. I am curious, how much would you like to play on this offensive line with Trey Smith coming back, Brandon Kennedy back at center? What do you think about this group that's getting a ton of hype and has big expectations heading into the season?
It's amazing. I love to see. I love to see that the offensive line is the bell cow. They're the group leading the way. A lot of older guys, which is going to help. You know, I know Morris and Wright are just, you know, sophomores, but having the older Trey Smith right next to you is huge. And especially with less fans or no fans, you can hear everything he tells you and know exactly what you need to do. I would love to play next to him.
Is it as simple, Kyler, as what Tennessee has done, just going out and recruiting to raise the bar of the offensive line? Or is there also a mental switch that has to flip with these guys as they're trying to go from a bottom four offensive line in the SEC to a top four this season?
I think that we found the right guys. You have to have the mentality to flip that switch. You know, a lot of times you might get a five-star, but they don't quite have the work ethic. They, you know, they don't quite have the chip on their shoulder enough to where they want to put work in. They want to become better. They want to take teaching and coaching. These guys do. They love it. That's, you know, them getting better is what they want. So their mentality and attack towards this season is what's gonna show. And, you know, first game hasn't started yet. There's huge expectations, huge potential for them. I hope they live up to it. And I really can't wait to see a lot of those guys succeed because, you know, their stories are great. And to see, you know, Cade trying to come in, transferring from Georgia, you know, if he gets the opportunity to play, Trey coming back from, you know, all the things that he had to go through, it's almost heartwarming.
Kyler Kerberson is on with us, former Tennessee offensive lineman, during our Call of All segment. What would Cade mean to this offensive line? As you mentioned, he's still waiting on official word from the SEC. What is the potential impact of Cade Mays joining the offensive line?
The amount of experience that he brings to it. He, you know, has SEC experience. He's older guy, so they can trust in him and what his knowledge and what he knows. He's also one of the toughest guys I've seen out on the field. And when you see another one of your teammates put a guy in the dirt, it fires you up. You want to go out there and do it yourself and be able to talk back and forth like, oh, I think my pancake is a little bit better than yours. So I think with his effort out there, his fire is very motivating. So I it would be huge. Now, one thing that, you know, I've seen some articles, a lot of the young guys are doing really well. And they're getting a lot of reps at practice, which is amazing. I mean, having depth at the offensive line is so important because it's a high injury position. You can get rolled up on very easily. So, you know, guys getting extra reps at practice, being able to go with the ones is huge.
Kyler, let me ask you this too. Tennessee is hoping for more production from the offensive line to help Jarrett Garantano in this last kind of go round for him. Just maybe kind of blossom and reach the full potential that we've all labeled him with over the past several years. What do you see the potential being for Jarrett Garantano this season with some realistic expectations?
Well, we've seen the ups and downs of him for sure. The highs and lows. Now with this offensive line, you can kind of turn it into a Tennessee Titans offense where, hey, we're going to run the ball. We're also going to do some play action off of it and be able to take shots downfield because of it, which is perfect for him. He's not necessarily the, you know, spread it out game manager, you know, Tom Brady, Randy Moss offense where it's just huge numbers and we're passing all over the place. Set him up for success, and I think Coach Chaney can do that. He can set him up exactly to his strengths, and the running game is really what's going to help him the most. It's going to, you know, keep him comfortable in the pocket where defensive linemen aren't just teeing off, you know, knowing it's a pass play all the time. So the running game is going to be huge, which that offensive line is going to help with. And, I mean, this is a huge year for him. You know, right now, I'm sure he wants to play football in the future and, you know, go on to the next level. This year, showing that he can come back from, you know, the mistakes he's made in the past and can become a better player is something that, you know, scouts and GMs and the NFL are going to take notice that you know, he has that fire, he has that fight in him.
We're talking to VFL Kyler Kurbison, former Tennessee offensive lineman. What would you say is your biggest question about Tennessee's offense as you head into the season? Something you want to see from the Vols maybe on Saturday, but as the season gets started up?
I want to see what their offense does. You know, they always talk about the strength in the offensive line. Let's see some run game. Put that running back 7 yards back. Let's see some power. Let's see some counter. As an offensive lineman, that's the thing I love. I want to see that run game. I want to see, you know, big runs going. I want to see smash mouth football. That's the biggest question is what their offense is going to look like. You know, Chaney's great with, you know, working with what he has, being able to adjust. As we saw last year, you know, in different games, he realized, oh, this isn't going to work. You know, their DBs are their strengths. We're going to have to run the ball more. Or, you know, their defensive ends are their strength. We're going to have to, you know, run some draws and screens just to slow those guys down and make it a little easier out there. So I want to see the football run, and I look forward to it. I can't wait to watch on Saturday.
It kind of reminds me of the color analyst on Thursday Night Football lamenting when Baker Mayfield was in the shotgun near the goal line last week, and they were like, just put him under center, get that back, get Joe Mixon back. Like, it was just so great. So that's what Kyler's comments just reminded me of.
Yes, exactly. If we were ever on the goal line, I do not want a shotgun formation unless it's maybe Dobbs and Kamara in shotgun. Then I'm okay with that.
Hey, Kyler, do you have any predictions for how things play out in the SEC East? The media, by the way, picked Florida ahead of Georgia with Tennessee third. What do you think there with the SEC East?
Yeah, I think especially the East, it's up for grabs. There are so many good teams in the East right now. I mean, even Kentucky is good. It's crazy. I think the most important thing on the season is not necessarily people staying injury free, but staying COVID free, you know, being able to be out there and play. I mean, teams could have an outbreak and you're missing a ton of guys for 10 days. So how would you deal with that? I think your plans, your parameters, the, you know, things that you're doing to keep everyone safe is going to be the most important team by team. And that's a crazy thought that, you know, it might not even come down to the X's and O's. It might come down to just low COVID rate. But you know, I always hate the fact that they would pick Georgia and Florida over Tennessee. I don't know the hype around Florida. You know, I always see Georgia as a big dog in the East, but I'm not sure about Florida. You know, they are a very back and forth team. You know, they might win 10 games, but the next year they might win 5. And I never quite trust them.
Kyler, before you go, Kyler Kurbison's here. It's our Call of All segment. We like to catch up on what VFLs are doing. Tell us what you're doing. Is you got the podcast launching up?
Yes. So I'm launching a podcast. It's going to be all about Tennessee Vol football. That's all I'm going to be talking about. The first episode is dropping next week. So get to talk about the South Carolina game. You know, games for the future. Going to have some other other BFLs that I played with and you know, maybe some coaches come on. And you can check all this stuff out. Hit the links in all of my social media, just Kyler Kurvison, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And I really look forward to doing this. I'm Vince, this is a new thing for me, and I hope everyone enjoys it.
Yeah, so life with a microphone, are you ready for that?
It's a
grind.
I
don't know. yeah, I know. I've you know, my biggest experience is working with you guys, and I always love that. So I'm hoping that I'm going to thoroughly enjoy this and be able to do the right thing while I'm on there, say the right stuff. It is a little nerve-wracking, and trying to understand audio technicians and all the stuff that goes into it is definitely a learning curve for me, but I'm excited to get started.
Yeah, if we can get ourselves on the air every day, Kyler, as Heather and I have been doing the from home radio, I'm sure you're younger, smarter than us. You can figure out the tech side of it. So check out the Believe in Tennessee Football podcast as that gets started up here this week. Before you go, were you recruited by Jim Chaney? Is that right? You were with him, I guess,
yes,
for a couple of years. Were you recruited by him as well?
Yes, he was the main recruiter for me. He oversaw the Tennessee area. It's funny, when I talk to my mom, she always mentions this. She's like, I always loved Coach Chaney. He was the best. He was so funny. And he is a very good recruit and very down to earth, and can connect with a lot of the players. So he was awesome. I loved having him as a coach, and I thought he was great.
Yeah, I brought that up because I was wondering, do you have a story or just anything that stood out of why you connected so well with Jim Chaney now that he's, of course, back at Tennessee?
I don't necessarily have a story of why I connected so well. I mean, I always just thought he was so funny, but there is one story my mom likes to mention. He was like, yeah, you can call me anytime. I would be glad to help, but know that once he signs that paper, I'm losing your number. And she died laughing at that and thought it was so funny, because he was like, yeah, during recruiting, I'm here for you, but once he signs that paper and he's here, he's mine, he's no longer yours. So she always thought that was funny, and that was the humor that Coach Chaney has, and why it is so fun to play for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know Tennessee's glad to have him back as well. Kyler, it's great to have you back on the show. You're welcome here anytime. Good luck getting the podcast started up. We'll be following that as well. So check out Kyler Kurvison on social media. Check out the Believe in Tennessee podcast that'll be starting up as well. Kyler, thanks for hopping on with us today. It's great to have you back on.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Hopefully I can get back on here soon. And let's go beat those Gamecocks.
There you go. Kyler Kurvison, former Tennessee offensive lineman. And are we partly responsible, Heather, would you say, for him venturing out into the podcast world?
Absolutely. We will take full credit for that because we helped him get his
credit,
feet
blame,
wet.
However you describe it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And also, we're going to need his alma mater to just go ahead and throw him a bone. First pod is going to drop after the South Carolina game. Give him a win to talk about Tennessee. Let this man's podcast come out strong.
You're confident it's going to happen. You've said on the record. We'll continue that part of the conversation. We'll get set up with the face-off next by Joel Silverberg right here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. Enjoyed that conversation with Kyler Kurvison. Remember, you can always check out our conversations online, 991thesportsanimal.com, in the podcast section of the WNML app and Apple Podcasts. You can try to avoid us. Good luck. We're going to find you somewhere out there. So go back and check out any interview from any show right here on the Sports Animal. Joel Silverberg is here today with Heather Harrington. I'm Josh Ward as Joel sets us up on the face-off.
You want some?
Head-to-head, toe-to-toe, let's go one-on-one with today's face-off.
But to be the man, you gotta beat the man!
presented by Fort Sanders Health and Fitness Center.
Are you ready?
Let's get this mother crock!
All righty, Joel, what do you have for us today?
Tennessee is a 3.5-point favorite against South Carolina. Which way do you lean?
Heather, this is me ducking. I lean South Carolina. On Sunday on the Sports Source, Chuck Cavalier set the line there too, and I had to pick a side. I picked South Carolina. Now I'm picking Tennessee to win the game. I just think it's going to be a tight one, so I'll take the points.
Okay, so we're setting the line here. It's what, 3? I'm going to take Tennessee and those points, or excuse me, 3.5. Over the Gamecocks. I still feel like there's an ability to continue the trend that started last year for the Vols. And we'll see what South Carolina's offense has. But as long as Tennessee doesn't shoot themselves in the foot, I think they cover.
Is Ryan Tannehill getting enough credit for how well he's played for the Titans?
This is hard to say. He hasn't thrown a pass over 20 yards through the first couple of weeks of the season, but guess what? He also hasn't needed to, and the Titans are 2-0 and rocking and rolling. Also, Corey Davis has caught 24 balls for either a first down or a touchdown. Those are 24 consecutive catches for a first down or a touchdown. So Ryan Tannehill is getting the balls to his playmakers, but I think he's getting enough credit.
I don't think so. I think that people still view him as Miami Dolphins dealing with injuries quarterback Ryan Tannehill. Before his major knee issues, he was actually pretty good there, and I think he's been better with the Titans. CBS ranked him as the number 19 quarterback in the NFL. I think that's too low. I think his numbers back up that he's better, and the offense does too.
Who wins tonight, the Lakers or the Nuggets?
From what I can tell, a lot of people are on the Nuggets here, plus the points, making it more competitive game, giving them a chance to win. And look, when the Nuggets start to show some real life, people want to follow them. I get it. I also right now lean toward ticked off LeBron being out there, and that's not going to be enough. I mean, he had a triple-double with 30 points the other night, and they still lost, but I'll take the Lakers.
Yeah, I think the Lakers, I don't know if the Lakers cover, because you said what earlier, it was around the 6.5 range. I think this could definitely be a tight one, but give me the Lakers beating the Nuggets tonight.
The Ringer is celebrating David Fincher week. What's the best David Fincher film?
This is really hard, Josh, because he's had some doozies. I think the most critically acclaimed is probably going to be The Social Network, but I'm going to tell you, the first time I saw the movie that I'm going to pick, it absolutely blew my mind. It's not a great rewatchable category, but it's Memento. The twist at the end, you don't see it coming. It's absolutely unbelievable. It's genius.
I'm going to go with Social Network. I just think it's a great, you know, there's the Ringer, that's the reference here, the rewatchable category, and I think it's great there. There's so many different just stretches you can pick up and watch. It's obviously historical in terms of its impact. So the Social Network for me would be the choice over 7.
Fun fact, he was a cameraman back for Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, back in the 80s. If the Dolphins lose tonight, will it be Tua time in Miami?
I want to say yes, but I will say no. I will say that they ride it out a little bit longer and they're careful and cautious with Tua. I am very excited to watch him in the NFL. If he has a good rookie season and Kyler Murray wins the MVP, I want to go on record today saying that I will pick Tua next year to win the MVP and place a wager on it because second-year quarterbacks. But right now I'll say it's going to take a little more time.
I think so, too. And I think that's honestly because the Jacksonville Jaguars don't look like the absolute dregs of the NFL that we thought we were going to be. So I don't think if Miami loses tonight that it would be just shameful and they'd need to make a switch at quarterback. I kind of lean towards what Josh said and just bring him along when he's ready. And then it'll be fun to watch Tua time.
All right, Josh gets the win.
Speaking of 7, Josh, which was your runner-up candidate for David Fincher's, they just actually did the rewatchables this week on 7. I need to go back and rewatch that because I'm pretty sure I have not seen it since the 90s when it came out.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. I would go back and check that out. Now, help me out. What was his role with Memento? Nolan directed, right?
Didn't Fincher write it?
Is that what it was?
I thought he had original screenplay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. So yeah, if I'm wrong in the category, then I can go along with your pick of Social Network. But I'm pretty sure he did the screenplay.
Yeah, yeah, I guess I was kind of just looking up his directing roles. Yeah. But no, that's, I mean, Memento is a movie I enjoyed. I will say that. Yeah, Seven, Social Network. Where are you on Fight Club? Did you see that? Thoughts on it if you did?
Fight Club, the first time I saw it, it's fantastic. It's mind-blowing in so many ways, and you're just like, whoa. And then you go back and rewatch it, and you try, because after reading about like everything they did and the little hints that they drop, you try to go back and watch it and catch all those little hints. But I will say I've just aged out of a movie that curses that much, has that much violence. Definitely when I was younger, all about it. The older I get, the less in tune with that I am. I'm getting boring.
37-year-old Heather Harrington versus 27-year-old Heather Harrington. We had that conversation this week.
Yes. Very different people. Same sort of body, but different people.
By the way, is it Social Dilemma? Is that what it's called, that's on Netflix that's getting a lot of attention?
Yeah, you're going to have to watch this and report back to me. I think it is kind of funny how Netflix pointing out people being addicted to social media is a problem, but there's just as many people that are addicted to streaming services like Netflix. So I do think that's a little funny note to add into that. But yeah, everybody's, I mean, if you're surprised in 2020 that your phone is listening to you and basically trying to get you to spend all your money on the things that you talk about with your friends and family members in the privacy of your own home, just don't be surprised. That's exactly what's happening.
What's that? Sorry, I was sending a Snapchat. by the way, I'm seeing Christopher Nolan as a screenplay as well for Memento, so I think that might be a Nolan.
Okay, then I am just totally wrong there. I thought I was always Fincher, so I will have to go back and double-check. I don't know what I'm talking about at this point.
All right, we'll come
Crazy
back for
Thursday.
Hour number two.
Yeah, fun times. That's
right. Hey, 37-year-old Heather Harrington, here we are. 656-9900 is the phone number for you to join us. Heather Harrington's here. I'm Josh Ward, Joel Silverberg as well. We'll talk more Tennessee football, getting ready for South Carolina on Saturday on 99.1, the Sports Animal.